Blog Talk Radio.
Do you know God has called you? Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue.
I learned more about the heart of leadership than the arch of leadership. What Eric Powell does in this session is make the leader in you come alive.
You're listening to On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Thanks for joining us. Friends, no matter if you are the producer or director or writer or an actor, no matter the role, you have a purpose and you're leading that purpose. Our goal here is simple, is to inspire and equip leaders to help them lead where they are. In other words, get you on cue with God's will, on cue with his calling on our lives, on cue, which is our purpose, and get others on cue with that purpose. Now, what is cue? And it's how Nehemiah, a model transformational leader, led a starved, desperate, broken, isolated people in building the wall around ancient Jerusalem and essentially building a way of life. He cued them up. C-U-E. C is for common ground. It's what can we agree on. It's really why we're coming together. U is a unified thought. What vision can we share is the what we plan to do with each other. And E, equally yoked, is what is the game plan? What's my role in it? What's success look like? And really, how do we get it done? So Q leadership in general integrates biblical principles of leadership using Nehemiah as a model to help you do two things. One, get people to trust you. And two, get people to follow you, which is discipleship. And those are the two axes of leadership that governs, that leads our ministry. As we always do, we want to start our show with a word of prayer. So, Lord, you are a powerful, merciful, loving God. Lord, we thank you for this day. Lord, continue to lead and bless this ministry and our audience and all that are serving you. And, Lord, we know that this Q leadership is your brainchild, but our calling in your name. We honor you today by doing two things, giving you the glory, and secondly, serving this generation through you. So, Lord, your word in Romans 12:2 tells us, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by renewing your mind, that you may prove what is good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. So, Lord, please use this ministry and complete that purpose. Align, equip, and transform new leaders for your glory, and help others to hear the call and receive this call and raise some transformational leaders and gatekeepers in your name. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Amen. So our as we always do, our show is about to have a dialogue. It's a conversation about leadership in God's Word, equip leaders with a roadmap, but really tapping the faith and building that trust and building that discipleship, and highlighting everyday leaders who are making a difference that can testify to God's goodness in their lives, in their work, in their service. And our show is a lot of things, but our show is not to criticize, but to shine as light on some truth and love. It's not to tell you what to do, but provide a different lens in order to see things. And thirdly, it's not really to focus on the mere symptoms of a problem, but rather the root of those problems. In a sense, treat the infection, not the runny nose. So today, as with any day, let's be open, and we pray that we hear the Lord and not me, and we have the right questions, and no matter what the differences may be, remember that life is about love and surrender. And there will be differences of opinions at some point, but let us do what a true transformation leader of our time says. Let us agree without being disagreeable, and be thought partners, have a fruitful dialogue. And so as we start our show, I want to share a story, as I always do. A few years back, my family, Ty and Kennedy and Carson, as well as my sister Donna, we were headed to the State Fair of Texas. For some flexibility, we decided to ride the light rail to Fair Park instead of having to drive and deal with parking. Our light rail system has several different lines, if you know, here in the DFW area, and we have to take the red line to stop at a stop downtown, St. Paul, in order to get on the green line to Fair Park, which is where all the State Fair activities are. As we waited for the green line, we got an unexpected visitor. A homeless man was boldly walking up, and my defenses, you know, I guess my spider senses just kind of went up, as they always do when a stranger walks up to my family. This time it was more than normal because the homeless man approached he was smiling. But I assumed that we were about to hear a hustle. You know, I just had made past judgment on him as soon as he was walking up. As soon as he got a few steps away from us, he just stopped. And he posed like a statue. And he was bent at the waist and his hands in the air like a V and his hands like cuffed over like a teacup. And he had a satchel of newspaper hanging around his neck. For about 30 seconds, he just stood there in that pose. And then suddenly, he shifted to another pose. And only his upper body shifted and he used his midsection like a hinge. And he stayed there for another 30 seconds. And then he did his pitch. He asked us to donate or buy one of the newspapers in the satchel. And then you got to know my sister Donna, as elegant as she always does, but direct. She wanted to say, why didn't you just ask us? She said, why didn't you act like you have some sense? You just need to ask us for donations instead of standing there like a fool. So she's that direct. You have to know my sister, and her direct and sharp words kind of shocked him, but it made him smile. Then she asked, what are you selling anyway? She asked him, and he began to explain that he was a street vendor. He had a license to sell these newspaper, and he posed there was like more of a gimmick to get stopped and get people to notice. And Donna gave him a half compliment and half question and said, so you have some sense then, don't you? And he said, yeah, I have plenty of sense. I have a master's degree. I said, master's degree? And he's homeless? That's what I'm starting to think. So if I recall correctly, it was in chemistry, I believe. But then all of us asked almost the same time, what are you doing on the streets then? And so this homeless man went on to share his story that had a master's degree, but he held a job for a while, and he really kind of lived a double life in a sense because he was a major drug dealer, using his chemistry, if you will, and also pimp and hustler. He got caught some years ago, lost his freedom, hit rock bottom, and once he was free again, he lived on the streets, and so long as he was panhandling, hustling from person to person, living from the hour to hour, where this is all he knows. And then he also shared us an old Dallas Morning newspaper article on him, and it was called The Statue Man. So you can always Google The Statue Man. You know what I'm talking about. Apparently, he was a local homeless celebrity of sorts, and he carried this article to kind of bring credibility to his story. But as he continued to tell his story, the Green Line train was approaching, and Donna asked him, does he do this all day, every day? And he said, yes. And then he said, well, I stand like a statue because in my homelessness, this is the only way people see me. You know, when I'm standing still in plain sight, they can't hide from me either way. And, you know, once he said that, you know, the Lord dealt with me on this because I had passed judgment as soon as I saw him. And I had to check myself and ask, was this really true for me and even for people in general? Although I prided myself of helping and giving what I had, but it was true. Friends, you know, do you notice people in their state of homelessness, walking on the street, or in their hopelessness, or any other lesslessness as we're playing on the words today? It's what brings us really to our question today. Are you or are others hiding in plain sight, hiding from your problems, hiding from people, or even from God wanting you to fix that problem? You know, to help us with that, we have a special guest today, and really, really excited about having award-winning writer, producer, and director M. Legend Brown, who's going to share his perspective on his award-winning movie, Hiding in Plain Sight, which really is our question of the day. Are we hiding in plain sight? With this amazing account of a family that has really helped no one else to turn, has run out of favors, owes everybody, has no home. M. Legend really shines a light on homelessness and of people who are really hiding that plain sight. So M. Legend, a little bit about him. He and his business partner, Eric King, owns Poor Child's Films and has about 12 screenplays in which none of them have been produced by his company. In 2012, he formed this faith-based division, which really focuses on primarily God's message. So stay with us as we conclude, in a sense, our Vow to Praise series with M. Legend Brown. So after the break, we'll bring him on, and we'll start our dialogue in lesslessness. hiding from plain sight. So during the break, stay with us. Call in if you want to share your thoughts or perspective this morning. Our number here is 310-861-2331. Feel free to press 1 on your telephone and ask a question virtually. We can bring you in. Friends, we'll love to hear from you. Again, the number is 310-861-2331. This is On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We'll be right back.
Lead them where they are by getting them on cue with God's will, by getting them on cue with His calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
How powerful is your leadership? Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on cue.
I learned more about the heart of leadership than the art of leadership. What Eric Powell does in this session is makes the leader in you come alive.
Do you know God has called you? Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue.
It should be a mandatory part of every church pre-membership class, every school leadership program. I think this curriculum effectively used not only positions a person for better leadership, but positions a person for better life.
Thanks for staying with us. You're listening on cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Remember, our mission here is simple, to help you lead where you are by getting on cue with God's will and His purpose. And we're taking calls today. Our number here is 310-861-2331. Feel free to press 1 on your telephone to come into our conversation or even join us on our live chat room and on Blog Talk Radio. We would love to hear from you. So today's question is lessness. Hiding in plain sight. We have our special guest helping us with this question is M. Legend Brown, award-winning writer, producer, and director. He's share his perspective on lessness of being homelessness. And with his award-winning movie, Hiding in Plain Sight. M. Legend, thanks for joining us.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Eric, for having me on.
I appreciate it. I know you're in the middle of a production and putting editing and so forth. We appreciate you giving us on your new movie that's coming out. We'll talk about it a little bit later. But thank you for taking some time out this morning helping us with this.
Oh, no problem. And I really, like I said again, I really appreciate you having me on. I always wanted to have the opportunity to talk about this powerful message and hope that, you know, it touches somebody's life and changes the perspective or the way we look at homelessness.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that's what the Lord calls us to do is a lot of this. You know, we're in the middle of we're actually ending our series, about a praise series with this, and we kicked it off on Easter weekend. And it's really about inspiring, you know, taking our gifts and really placing them in certain places, and you're doing it on the big screen, and we're glad to have you here. And you know, as we always do, we want to start our conversation with you with two questions. The first one's waiting to hear the answer, but then second is probably more trivial. But the first one is one word that describes you.
Optimistic.
Okay. Share more.
I feel like when we're on this quest and we search for our purpose and we find our purpose, then the challenges come along. For a while, I used to always tell people I was very determined. And I remember when I first started back in the day, my MySpace page, and I took a picture of myself and I bronzed it, and I said, I put under there, determined. Nothing will change my purpose. And when I got a little closer and really understanding my purpose, things became very difficult. And in difficult situations, you can either become negative or you can stay optimistic and positive. And the more I stayed positive, and I found a mentor, and he says, every day you have to find some reason to be positive in a bad situation. And then when the angels go out for harvest, all they're picking is positive gifts to send down to you from heaven. But if you stay negative, they're going to take negative gifts to send down to you from heaven. So I changed my philosophy, and I always wanted to be optimistic because every day I wanted those positive gifts. I wanted something that, whether it was just somebody who said hello or somebody that changed my day, you know, from going from bad to good. So
right.
I hope that makes sense to everyone.
It does. It fits right into... You know, you decided to vow to praise regardless of the situation, right? You're going to praise
yes.
him you know, regardless of the situation. You know, our second question is probably trivial, but I'm still going to ask you, but really, if we just kind of leads into kind of telling about yourself, you know, if money was no issue, what would you do every day? But I'm afraid you're doing that every day already, of making movies. Talking about your stories on film. Can you talk about that and kind of really start talking about your story in a sense? So we'll just jump over that question, right?
Okay. I'll kind of piggyback and bleed into this by answering the question. Yeah. I was talking to a group of kids Friday, and they asked me, what is it that How do I help them find what their purpose is or what their goal is or what they should be doing in life? And I said, the moment you find something that you can do, no matter what, you go to work every day, and you don't care about making money, and you don't care how long it takes.
Yep.
That's when you find your purpose and you know what you're doing in life. And so the money will come. That's a bonus when you work around really great people and you're talking to really, like now, this is more reward than any amount of money because that's the journey, that's the career.
Mm-hmm.
Leading that into hiding in plain sight. So by doing what I love to do, and it isn't dictated by the amount of money, because you can't tell a story like this and expect to get rich off of it, or you can't tell a story like this and expect the world to open up the doors. You tell a story like this because you feel like you have a voice and that you need to make sure that the world sees it from a different pair of lenses. And
right.
So in doing that, you try to tell the story as raw and as uncut as you, without Hollywoodizing it and saying, hey, this is the truth. This is what it looks like. This is it uncut. So only way you can do that is if you do what you love and you're not worried about the financial return. You pray that there's a financial return, but that's not your main purpose. Your main purpose is the message of what you're trying to show the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell the story raw and uncut. I mean, really, not only just the story that you put on the screen, but your story in itself is really raw and uncut. So how did you get started? You know, it's kind of share how it, your vision, purpose kind of
okay.
came.
Yes, I was actually sitting on my job. I was working for a furniture company, and they were about to lay people off, and I wasn't in that point telling stories or anything like that. I wasn't into the film business. I was writing books at the time, and I wanted to transition my life. I didn't want to continue to work for a company because they had just dropped a sign that said, we made $1 billion, and I hadn't made a dime of that. I looked at my check, and it was just really, really – and I started doing the math, and I was like, I'm making other people rich, and I want to do something that fulfills my life. I don't want to do this anymore. And so I prayed, and I happened to walk into a barber shop, and this guy was showing skits on TV, little 3-minute skits. And I gave him one of my books, and he read it, and he said, well, why don't you turn one of my skits into a full movie? And then he said, why don't you direct it? And when we started casting, and I fell in love with the directing side of it, and but it wasn't that great. And so I went to the library, and I started studying for 2 years on how to make films. I wanted to learn how to make films. And in doing so, I tell this story all the time. I was humbled by the librarians who would put books. I would stack all the books, every book they had in the library on one table that dealt with film, writing, and producing. Anything mm-hmm. that dealt with film. And it was like a mountain. And the system was if I set it on the right side after I finished reading it, I would read it from cover to cover. They would put it back on the shelf. If I hadn't finished reading or hadn't read it, they would leave it on the table. It was like my little section in the Dallas library. And that I did that for 2 years. I read every book in there. And then I started working on sets, and I realized what I wanted to do. And I remember doing an interview outside. I was shooting a film called Dirty Red, and my crew members used to always beat me up. They used to always say, Michael, why don't you do something positive? Why don't you do something positive? But as filmmakers, we have so much hurt and so much anger and so much pain inside of us that we have to get all that out. And I realized God was still purging me and purging all this anger and purging all of this self-doubt and purging all of this stuff out of me, because even this film was a gangster film. But the twist was that this gangster who – it was a story of Paul or Saul and then Paul.
Okay.
And so this young lady who was just vicious all her life, and then she goes on her way to make a delivery, somebody hits her in the head, and she goes blind. And this nun finds her, and this nun teaches her how to get her sight back. And not the sight of the visual sight, but the inner sight of where she's been going wrong and the stuff she's been doing. So she changes and transforms. But this was wrapped around a gangster film. So God was still working with me then before we formed King and Brown to start telling faith-based stories. And we've always wanted to reach people on a different platform. We've never wanted to reach people. I don't like preaching to the choir. That's not what
no,
we're called.
I get it. I get it. If you see that story, you know, I teach, as you share with you, talk with the kids, a part of our Q curriculum is helping people understand their purpose. And part of what you just articulated is when you start and you start where you are and use what you have. You know, you decided that you wanted to get in films, not necessarily, and I'm saying this is not the route for everybody, but instead of applying for film school, you started finding sets. You went to the library. You studied. The library was your film school. And, yeah. And in a sense, that positive nature, the optimistic nature, were the angels, as you said, sharing down, throwing down positive blessings. That person that challenged you to do something positive kind of leads you to that thing, that element. So how important for even just, I know it's trivial to adults or whomever listening, how is it important just to just follow your passion? You don't have to wait for all the resources to come to you. Just do it.
Yes, that's true. And there's it's a common saying that most people change their career paths when they get into their 40s or 50s. And I think because once you get to a place and you realize you did all the work, you've made money, and money wasn't the happiness, and you realize I want to do stuff that makes me happy. and I want to do things that I enjoy. Life becomes, my mentor tells me all the time, he says, I only have a few years left on this earth, and I only want to do things that I like to do. I love to do. I want to help people. I want to reach back. I want to, I don't want to go work a 9-to-5 and have to be, challenged every day in a negative way. And sometimes that negativity isn't coming from the job. It's just that you don't want to be there. And so when you start to look at your lifespan and where you are in life, then you decide, you know what, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. I want to do something that's rewarding and rich in the sense of my life is fulfilled and not rich as in monetary. So I think if you can follow your passion and follow your dream and find your purpose, some people struggle to find their purpose in life, not because we don't know our purpose, it's because we're unsure of our purpose. And I was in that spot for a long time. I used to cry out to God. I'll tell you this quick story without burning up the time. So I was a filmmaker. I've been a filmmaker for like 7 years now, and at this point in my life, and things weren't going great, and I needed a job. So I decided, I was like, you know what, I'm going to go down, and I'm going to drive buses and drive kids to school every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I go and I take the test, and I'm a very, competitive person. So when I went took the test, I expected to get an A. I failed the test the first 4 times, and you only can take it 5. And so I go and I study, and now every time I sit in front of this kiosk or machine, I'm praying. I'm like, God, let me pass this test. And so, again, I fail, and I go, maybe this is not my purpose. You know how we do. And so the lady calls me, and she says, Michael, for some reason there was an error in your test, and you can come back and take it. And I take it, and I pass it by one point. So I go, I take the test, I get the license, and I have to go and apply for the bus job. And they say, okay, yes, you get the job. All you have to do is train. I go through training. Then they send me back to take the final driving test. I take the driving test and pass. And I get to the desk, and the lady says, wait a minute. Your test that you took on the computer was not correct. You have to take it again. And you have to take it today because today is the last day to take it.
Okay.
Now, mind you, I haven't studied. I take the test. I fail the test. And I go home. I'm deflated. I actually sit in my car, and I scream out. I said, God, why would you let me do this? Why would you? If I'm going to be a filmmaker, let me be a filmmaker. If I'm going to be, if it's meant for me to get a regular job, let me get a regular job.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just being so angry. And I was sitting in front of the DPS office, and I'm angry at God. And my phone rings, and a good friend of mine says, hey, you still coming out to my house today? He lives like 2 hours away from me. I said, no, not today. I'm just in a bad place. He said, well, no, come out. And we had a crying session. It was me, two guys, and we're just being very vulnerable and very open with each other. And I left there. I apologized to God on my way home. And that next morning, the lady from the DPS office, I don't even know how she gets my phone number. She calls me, and she says, Michael, I called. I was so disturbed by yesterday that you had to walk out of it and you didn't pass. I was so disturbed. I called Austin, and they told me that you could take the test again. So I walk in there. I make 100 on the test. Pass it. She says, nobody's ever done this before. So I make 100. I'm feeling good. I got my license. I go to work. I said, okay, God, this is what you want me to do. I'm so excited. So I go to the job, and they do the orientation. They said, you're going to have to drive today. We don't have time to train you how to deliver the kids, how to drop the kids off, because we are a shortage. So I said, okay, this is my purpose. I'm going to drive today. I'm going right into the job. I get on the bus. So we get, I'll take that back. We get one training session, and that's that morning. I get to ride with somebody. The sky opens up, and it rains cats and dogs. I mean, it's pouring down. We can't see. And in that moment, I hear a still voice that says, this is not what I want you to do.
He kept showing you, right?
This is, yeah. Yes.
He
yes.
kept showing you. Kept and, putting hurt obstacles in your way.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And that moment I realized, I accepted being a filmmaker, and I accepted the role of being a filmmaker, and I accepted not being, that it wasn't going to be easy, that it wasn't, but the paths that I'm supposed to walk, I know my purpose now. And so in that moment, I realized I had already knew my purpose, but I didn't trust my purpose.
Yep. And he showed you just continue to persevere and be optimistic. You will be fine at the end of the day. So with that, though, you know, for our last couple of minutes for this segment, this part of our show, how important is your relationship with the Lord, and how does it manifest itself in his work?
It is very important. I make no steps without his approval. And if you notice in the film, it says, let go and let God. That was one of the biggest things for me is I didn't know what that meant. I was the character who says, I don't even know what that means, let go and let God. And in that moment that I just told you about that story, I realized what let go and let God means is sometimes getting out of your own way. To get back to the question is, if I trust and believe that God is my Savior and provider, then why don't I lean on him? Why don't I give him all control, all command of everything that I do? You know, the first time we did a film, we prayed on the set. And let me back that up. So I had hired this devil worshiper. I guess I'll say that. He didn't believe in God, but he was a devil worshiper on my set, and people never could understand it. I was like, Michael, how do you have this devil worshiper on set? So for the first 5 years, he would never pray with us, never. I would say, we're going to say prayer before the shoot, and if you want to stay, you can stay. If not, we're not stepping on anybody's religion. At that fifth year, he walked into a church with us. He would always pray with us. I don't know if he still believes or not, but we made progress. And I think that's sometimes what in our lives what we do. There's people on our sets who have either left God, who have got angry at God, and through the process of working on a film that's a faith-based film, have opened their lenses up and have opened their hearts up to say, you know what, I want to see what this is that you guys believe so much. There's a good friend of mine who worked on my set, and I won't embarrass him by calling his name. When we got ready to do the film of Hiding in Plain Sight, we didn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you can't make a movie with no money. I said,
right.
You can't make a movie off of faith. You got to have tangible money. I said, I'm going to make this movie off of faith. He says, Michael, you can't do that. By the end of the film, we finished it, everything. He came back to me. He says, you know what? I don't understand how you did that. I believe now that you can do a movie off of faith. And I think it opened his world up a little bit to maybe researching. Him and his family went to church a couple of times, and they started to believe a little bit more, to reconnect their lives with God, you know. And that's what I do, to reaffirm by walking the walk. I was telling somebody the other day that a friend of mine was telling me that she had some struggles in her life, and she was watching a little bit of my film. She's working on my film, and she was going through a lot of things. And she asked me, this is just the other day, she turned to me. She says, why do you believe in God? How do you know God's real? And I began to tell her why I felt like, and I knew, and I had a great connection with God. And then she tells me, she says, you know, I have a lot of peace when I'm working on your film. And for me, that means either one or two things. That means that you either see peace and you want to go find out what that peace is. Is it something that's dealing with the film and the message in the film? Is there an underlying message in the film and you're going to go seek that out? Or you're starting to see and realize what I feel and what I see and what my connection with God is. Because she says, you have a really good connection with God. He talks to you. I've never heard God's voice. But in saying that, I think she wants to hear God's voice. And so now,
so you
start somebody on that journey.
Absolutely. So you've introduced and allowed them to taste and see just a little bit.
Yes.
Yep. So after the break, We're going to continue our conversation with M. Legend Brown around lessons that's hiding in plain sight. We'll get into parts of the movie and as well as how it plays into homelessness as well as other parts of our lives. So, friends, please stay with us. We're taking calls at 310-861-2331. To ask a question, feel free to press 1 on your telephone, and that virtually raises your hand, and Kennedy can bring you right in. So we'd love to hear from you. So this is On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We'll be right back.
Lead them where they are by getting them on cue with God's will, by getting them on cue with His calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
How powerful is your leadership? Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on cue.
I learned more about the heart of leadership than the art of leadership. What Eric Powell does in this session is makes the leader in you come alive.
Do you know God has called you? Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue.
It should be a mandatory part of every church pre-membership class, every school leadership program. I think this curriculum effectively used not only positions a person for better leadership, but positions a person for a better life.
Thanks for staying with us and listening to On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Remember, our mission here is simple, to help you leave where you are by getting you on cue with God's will and His purpose. So today's question of the day is lessness, hiding in plain sight. We have our special guest, award-winning writer, producer, M. Legend Brown, who's here to share his perspective on his new film and as well as career around dealing with the tough topics that we all sometimes maybe ignore or not necessarily know that's there. M. Legend, thanks for staying with us during the break. As I shared before, we talked to tackle some of the topics and really shine a light on some of those things that people may be shameful or even prideful of. My first experience with you is when you tackled the whole notion around AIDS and you casted my put a shameful plug in here for my wife, but you casted her in one of your in that more some years back. And so I just applaud you for taking on those things from AIDS to mental illness and now to homelessness and hiding in plain sight.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a visual look from your lenses of how you see the world. And I think that sometimes we see the world in a bigger scheme. Like you said, when you see somebody walk up to you that's homeless, the first thing you think of is, oh, they're going to start hounding me, or they're going to put a con on to get some money.
Right.
And And when we realized that the world had shifted, that when, you know, one of my producers, her favorite line is when we're talking about hiding, she said that everybody talked about the housing crisis, but they never talked about where the people went. The people had to go somewhere that got out of their houses. So we only see homelessness from, we were only seeing homelessness from one perspective, and that was either schizophrenia or drug addicts or people who just were lazy, not people who lost their homes during the toughest time in our economy, and then they had to go to living in their cars and living on the street.
Wow, that's powerful. You're right. It's so simple. Now, no, realizing where the people went. Wow. You know, as I talk, listen to the film. I mean, not listen, watch the film. Walking away from it, there's a few words. I always kind of pick up two or three words to kind of stick out, and the three that came in my mind were self, pride, and shame. You know. Was I on to something, especially when it comes to the main character, Darius Blackman?
Yes, he had way too much pride. And the reason we took the approach of pride is, I got to give you a little backstory to this story. I was visiting my uncle at a hospital in Dallas. He was having his leg amputated. He had diabetes. And so I was going to get me something to eat, and I was walking out of the hospital. There was a couple who was storming out of the hospital. They were rushing out of the hospital, and I followed them to their car because they were very upset. And as, just being a writer and a filmmaker, we observe people, and we're always studying people. So as they went to their car, I seen them headed to a station wagon, something I hadn't seen in forever. And then it was blacked out, and I thought it was just blacked out, but and then there was trash bags on top of it. And then I started to look even closer, and I realized the inside of it was full of trash bags and trash bags. And then we began to talk, and they began to tell me that they, reluctantly, they began to tell me that they were homeless and that the hospital wouldn't give them any service. And so as we talked, and they found out I was a filmmaker, and they said, Michael, I don't think a lot of people know what's going on out here. I don't think they know that this is an epidemic. And I tried to give them money, and I tried to offer them a night stay at a hotel or whatever I could do to help. And they said, no, you're a filmmaker. Tell our story. Let the world know there are people out there that are out there like us. And so I began to research this story, and with my producer Cherise Henry Chassie, and we began to research this story, and we realized that this was a huger epidemic than what the world really knew. Even for me, I didn't know that it was this brand new to just not. It was real people homeless. And the more I watched it, 2020 had a special called Hard Time Generation, and there were just several episodes like this on different CNN and 2020, and I realized, wow. And as I talked to the couple and I asked them, I said, so how did you actually get into this position? They said, pride. They said, Michael, we would get money from our family and friends, and we would still live like we were okay. We would. But they went from, she said, they went from $400K to living on the street. She said, so we would get money from our family and friends, and we would throw parties. We would go on vacations because we didn't want people to know that we were in trouble.
Wow.
And so that was the first, and I was like, that's the way I need to tell the story. And secondly, in the story, I wanted to make sure that we knew that family always has to stick together because family can get us through almost anything. And that's why I wanted to tell the story from the perspective of not pointing fingers. Because a lot of people started, when I talked to and interviewed people, they were telling me how they would become very vicious with their partners. The women would be screaming and upset with their counterparts or their partners and saying, hey, you could go get a job. You won't go get a job. And the men would say, I'm trying to do everything I can, and I can't find a job, and I feel helpless. And I met one couple who said, We started there, but I realized where he was coming from, and he realized where I was coming from, and we just began to lean on each other and pull on each other, and we're working our way out of this. And that was the message that I wanted to tell, that no matter what hardship and no matter what you go through, if you stick together, you can overcome anything. But the moment that you divide, then you're conquered.
Yeah, you are conquered. Yeah, that goes along with a lot of different things. You know, when you kind of look at through the whole movie, and even just staying with Darius, when he's kind of center of most of this, you know, he went through some cycles and stages, what I call the lesslessness, right? You picked up a great word here around helplessness or even defenseless. You know, it was more of the shame and pride. You know, last week my guest made a great point. She said, when we go through trials and tribulations, we have to get sick and tired of self and have to break that exclusion of shame. You know, Darius not only had shame to deal with, but he had his pride, as you said, to define how damaging were both of them together and his demise.
They were, you know, that was probably the biggest downfall for him, and until he could come to grips with that or cope with that, he could never hear God's voice. And that is why when I was thinking about this story and I was thinking about, well, we always have matriarchs in our life. We always have people who can kind of cut through all of that other stuff and make us realize where we are. And that's why I wanted to cast Miss Hall, because Miss Hall gives us when she says let go and let God, just means sometimes it's just getting out of your way and letting God. We understand that because it's coming from a person who has a lot of weight in our lives, and then mostly that's our grandmother and that's somebody in our life that is stable and that we look up to. So in order for him to get past his pity, because pity comes after, like you said, there are stages you get. At first they were okay with it. They were trying to make it happen. The couple gets their vouchers. And so now, even when they got their vouchers, they didn't get angry. They didn't get upset. They tried to say, well, that's just life, and life gets in the way. The final straw is when they get pulled over, and Darius can't handle it anymore. He begins to fall into his pity. He begins to start his pity party. I can't find a job. Now, we didn't get the voucher, and my kids are hungry. I'm the man. And that's the other thing is, I'm the man. I'm supposed to be doing all of this.
Yeah.
And not leaning on his counterpart and saying, hey, look, whatever we got to do to get out of this, I need help. And then that's why I wanted to make sure that he came back and apologized, because sometimes as men, we go off and do things for the sake of, I'm doing it to protect my family, but we never come back and say, hey, look, I'm sorry for all the stuff that I was doing. I wasn't right. I was in the heat of the moment. Yeah, I was in a bad place, but still, I apologize for my actions. And you know, that's, we ask for forgiveness inside of that.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and we all go through that and have experienced that at some form or fashion. And then you're right, you have to go back and apologize and make it right. But let me pick up on something. You mentioned around the whole hotel voucher. You know, he went to a version of a sense of pittiness and jealousy, that what I'm calling cheerlessness, right? And when they didn't get the voucher, you know, in a sense, they didn't say it, but you could see from the body language and their voice that they were bitter and jealous. You know, in this process, right, how important is it not to be jealous of somebody else's blessing?
That is very, very hard. I mean, we still have that human element. We still have that flesh that you look at somebody and you say, how is it that they're climbing the ladder before me? I mean, you know, I mean, that's just part of our, that's part of our makeup, our DNA is, but we, that's where the God factor comes in. That's where the belief comes in. That's where when we lean on God, that we know, okay, you can easily say, well, they have done something in their life that I can't see, that they paid their dues. It's not a God trick. You know, Oprah Winfrey uses that word a lot. She says, you know, I thought God was playing a trick on me, and I was like, this is a God trick. And so when you have favor and you're in line with God, then you just know that I can't get jealous of somebody else's success. If I rejoice in their success, then my success, I can rejoice in my success even more, because I haven't been bitter and I haven't held something away that keeps me from receiving my blessing, because I'm envious of somebody else, which we know envy is not is that a good thing? It causes cancer inside of us, and it causes us to become bitter and small, and we start to think small, and we start to really become tight, and we don't branch out, and we can't be open as a flower. We're closed, and so we can't even get water into us to help us grow. So we're so tight, and then we become brittle, and we're easy to break.
Easy to break, you know. And what's a lot of times where we see what really sparks a lot of that is the whole hopelessness element. You know, when you get to the point where you just have no other hope, when you're not leaning on the Lord. You know, as you kind of go through this whole breaking element, there's a key word in this. You know, as Ty and I were watching this, she picked up on something that she always does that I missed and many miss. You know, during the scene where Josie and the kids were coming back from washing up for the night, Darius was tending to his fire, and his daughter makes an observation. She says, "Dad, your fire is almost out." Okay, and she says, "Was this your thought that his faith was waning, or the fact that his fire of shame, pride, and self was still burning, but it was almost out? How were you positioning that?"
His pride was almost out. His faith was starting to struggle. If you notice, he was reading the Bible. And in that reading the Bible, he was still upset. He was still angry. But in that process, he was debating. He didn't throw the Bible into the fire. So if he'd have threw the Bible into the fire, we would have seen this big raging fire, because that's it. There's no coming back for him. But by him not doing that, then we realize the anger is leaving. And now he's still angry, but it's starting to find his way again to kind of get a purpose again. And so then after that, if you notice, she goes and talks to grandmother. But right after that, he goes and talks to his grandmother, and he starts to get his hope back. And so that was a huge turning point for us. That was one of the turning points that I wanted to make sure. And people sometimes think the robbery was the turning point. But if you notice, he was already at a great place after the robbery. He was already needing his family. He was already worried. So that was the moment that his anger was starting to, if you started to subside, and he was starting to be more open to what life has, not what he can accomplish, but what him and God can accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and that goes when you talk about anger. I can remember a line that Mama Ida, who was played by Ms. Hall, she said, "The Lord has a way of making Darius scream out." And that anger, in a sense, when he got to the point to where, can you talk about when he got to the point he just screamed out and knew he couldn't, that turning point of, "Lord, okay, now I'm going to get this together."
Yes. A prime example, I took that from my life, is in that car when I was so angry about not getting which way to go. Do I do a filmmaker, or do I continue to be a filmmaker, or do I go get a regular job? I literally screamed out at the top of my lungs, and I was like, "What is it that?" So God has a way of taking us to a place where we have to call on Him. We have to. And Darius was the same way. Darius got to that point where he was. If you notice, he was pacing in front of the church. He was so angry that he couldn't even see the church anymore. All he could see was a building. And till that robbery, and he cries, he doesn't cry out in the sense of yelling and screaming, but he cries out, "And Lord, please don't let this be happening." Now he's calling on God. He's not saying, "I need to go find my wife." And a lot of people misunderstand that situation. Like, "Oh, he's not being a man," or "he's not going to..." No, he gave it all to God at that moment. He's saying, "God, please bring my wife back. Please. I can't do it anymore. I can't fight anymore. I can't do anything anymore. I'm going to be humble. I'm going to rely on you. I'm going to give it all up to you."
Okay. I see it. Because that thought went through my mind as well, especially when they got robbed. And I took it as he was standing back to protect his kids. But now I see it. I can see it in his face. "Lord, I'm waiting for her to come back around that corner in one piece." Wow. Right. And so when you get to that point to where, you know, you mentioned earlier, when you go through these cycles of challenges and so forth, and you got to stay optimistic. That's essentially what Darius did. And you compare what you shared at the beginning of the show about then the angels can start sending you blessings, positive blessings, because you're being positive. And so which really leads to a blessing that the Lord sent them through Kevin, the teacher. But before we get to that particular blessing, though, you know, two of Kevin's students was kind of in the midst of some of these cycles, too, from their parents of self and pride. Marcus's mother, as one of the characters, he's like the first male of the family, kind of de facto husband, as Ty shared, and kind of keeping him out of school, working to make ends meet, and she would admit that she got her pride. How detrimental is the pride from one generation to the next? How important is to break that cycle in order to really let go and let God?
We do have to break that cycle. I did a movie a couple of years ago called Kissed by the Devil, which was about family secrets and how those secrets go from one generation to the other, to the next generation to the next generation. We have to break that cycle because then it's just a generational curse now. And so with this pride, and I wanted to show that pride is not, in Darius' case, it's because he's a man and he's helpless. And then there's pride that if I don't have the proper, I might have the education, but life gets in the way, so my pride is not going to let my kid, I need you to be here. I need you to fill in where your dad walked out at. And so you have so much pride that you won't allow your kid to go to school, and you won't allow your family to be whole because you've made some mistakes, and so now you want to put that on that generational curse onto your son. And so guess what he's going to do? He's going to have so much pride. He didn't even go to the teacher and say, hey, I want to get back in school. We all knew he wanted to go back to school, but he followed the footsteps of his mom, and he was so prideful that he couldn't even ask the teacher to say, help me. How can we find a way? He just relied on the teacher to continue to try to work this out, and or not even enough pride to go to swallow his pride and go to his mom and say, I want to go back to school. And I thought that role was played very well by Denise Lee, and in that transition of her saying, maybe, and we had to bring it back around full circle for her to say, I need to let my son do this. This is something that he has to do. This is something that he must do in order for him to become a true man and break this cycle. And then for the rest of the kids, now the whole situation turns in that household. And the same thing with the Hispanic gentleman that I wanted to show in the film, pride in a different sense.
Right,
you know,
right.
There's so many different levels of pride, and pride of you being more educated than me, because I don't know where the switch has been for America where we have stopped wanting our kids to be better than us. We've stopped wanting our kids to have to say, I need you to go beyond or go way beyond where I've gone. This is only the benchmark. I'm the benchmark, and you need to take that another 1,000 yards. And so instead of him saying that, he wanted to pull his child back and say, look, you should be happy with where we are right now. You can go get a job, and you can work it hard, and you can just work. Don't dream. And once you take those dreams away, then you've let your pride and your humility stop, or not humility, but your humility, because you don't have enough. You just feel like you're content where you are. And so we wanted to show all those levels, even in Kevin's wife. She had a certain pride about her, about, you know, our family, we don't need to give all our money away. We do our little charity things, and that's enough. You don't need to be out there trying to get these kids back in school. And how we came about that story was we read an article in a newspaper, I think it was in Seattle, about this teacher that would go around using these vouchers because these kids wouldn't come to school because they didn't have books, they didn't have shoes, they didn't have glasses, they didn't have the essential stuff to keep their self-esteem up so they could be successful in their classroom. So we thought that would be another layer of telling this story that maybe we just need to shine a light on it. Sometimes we think you don't have to have Jordans, but if you go to school and you don't have the proper tools to do your job, then your self-esteem goes down. I remember a couple of years ago, I could tell you all kind of stories. This journey for me has been really, really fascinating. I was riding the bus. I used to ride the bus every day and didn't have a car, and I'd ride everywhere. I didn't have electricity in my house, so I had a computer that was – I used to have to tape it together. And I would ride the bus. I would charge it up at night. I would charge it up, yeah, at night so I could ride right in the morning headed to work. And so I was writing, and this one lady, she sat next to me. She says, I see you writing every day. What do you do for a living? I was about to tell her I was a film producer. As I looked past my computer, there's a hole in my computer, and I can see, and my shoes have holes in them. And I just looked at her and said, I just like to write. And she said, no, you do more than that. But because I would have said I'm a film producer, and she would have said, well, you have this old raggedy computer and your shoes, you don't have decent shoes. How are you a film producer? So without having – so imagine a kid who just doesn't have the proper shoes where the soles are out or can't have glasses and they can't really see the work. How easy is it for them to say, you know what, I just won't go because I don't want to be embarrassed?
Yep. You essentially a lot of great nuggets in that. It's breaking cycles, leaving people better from where you found them, especially the next generation. In a sense, you help – Marcus's mother and as well as Mr. Gomez kind of take their Bible out of the fire, in a sense, right?
Yeah.
And so, hey, what we're going to do is take a quick break, and we'll come back with M. Legend Brown, who is the award-winning author, writer, and as well as producer of Hiding in Plain Sight. And if you got any questions or comments, feel free to call us at 310-861-2331 to ask a question. Press 1 on your telephone that raises your hands virtually. Friends, we'd love to hear from you. Again, the number is 310-861-2331. And this is On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We'll be right back.
Do you know God has called you? Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue.
You lead them where they are by getting them on cue for God's will, by getting them on cue for this calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
Who is your leadership? Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on cue.
And we're back. Thanks for staying with us. You're listening to On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Power. Remember, our mission here is simple, to help you lead where you are by getting you on cue with God's will and His purpose. So today's question of the day is lessness. We're hiding in plain sight. We have our special guest, M. Legend Brown, is an award-winning writer, producer, and director. He's sharing his perspectives on lessness, in a sense of homelessness, with his award-winning movie, Hiding in Plain Sight. So, M. Legend, before the break, we were talking about Kevin, who's somewhat an unsung hero in the movie. He's what it takes to serve and help those in need. He taught, he clothed, he fed, he provides the basic essentials for all those he came in contact with. How important is someone like Kevin in our lives?
I think we need those Kevins in our lives. I think when times get tremendously hard, God sends those little small angels to remind us of His greatness. And I think that Kevin reminds us of God's message that, you know, as long as we stay the course, that He will send people in our path to continue to help us grow and help us continue our journey. So that's, to me, that's why Kevin was so important. And we need people like that in our lives. We need people like that that inspire us, and like yourself, who's doing really, really tremendous work in the community, that you never know what you're doing to help somebody else's life, to help somebody else's day, to help somebody through their journey. And it might not be as big as Kevin that's going around and giving vouchers. I mean, he didn't even know his purpose. God just used him like he's used tons and tons of other people in life to move them, to move something else forward. So that's kind of the purpose of Kevin, is to remind us of God's grace.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I'm going to ask you, you know, Kevin had some struggles, as you mentioned, his wife was really, so, you know, we do work in the community. Let that just be it. Only use our funds in order to help other people directly. So I'm going to ask you the same, Kevin's wife, and also Marcus's mother, asking, why do you care?
You know, I thought about this question. And I think if you believe, if you're a Christian and you're a believer, and it's one of our commands, and not the great commandments, but it's one of our commands, is to help, to become, and it fulfills us as humans, is to make sure that we're doing everything in our lives. We don't have a complete full life if we're not, I hate to use a cliche of reaching back, helping somebody, giving somebody. Well, you know, it's better to give than receive. I remember just a couple of years ago when I first released this film, I was struggling with people always asking, taking from me. And I talked to this pastor one day. I said, Pastor, I just met him, and I wanted to screen my film at his church. And I said, how do you deal with people who are always taking? And he said, do you want to be a giver or a receiver? And I said, I don't know, because I want to be a receiver. He said, so you telling me that you would rather have people give you stuff all the time than you having stuff and being able to give it? He said, if you're a giver, that means you have stuff to give. And that made sense to me. So I said, you know what? No, I want to be a giver. Because if you just look at it from that simple philosophy that I'm giving because I have so much, God has given me so much, and it doesn't mean that he's given me knowledge, he's given me this life journey, he's given me the fortitude to share and help somebody else who might be going through the same thing I'm going through. So that's why I care, is because I think there's so much out there that we're commissioned to do. I mean, beyond that, to be full and well-rounded as a person, we have to give back, and we have to care.
We do. I mean, Christ left his, our greatest commandment is to love at the end of the day, right? And
yes.
So
yes.
I'm going to turn that question around just a little bit and ask, why should we, our audience, our friends who are listening today, care?
I guess it starts and ends with the commission by God, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it really starts and ends there. We're called to fish, and if we're not fishing, then we're not fulfilling God's purpose. So, and if you're not caring, then you're not fishing.
Yeah, if we're not fishing, love that. If we're not fishing. That's probably my quote of the day. Then, so. As we were talking about this whole stages and cycles of lessness, and I'm just playing on the words of, you know, we talked about homelessness, we talked about cheerfulness, defenselessness, and really it came down to it, faithlessness, when all hope is gone, and you know faith steps in, you know, but Darius, you know, he lost his, but you know. But in the same time, he recaptured it as well. And why did he think, even before he decided to move on, why did he think he could fix it? I hate to go back, but I want to make sure and make this point here.
You know, I think that's, and I'm going to speak from a man's perspective. I think that's part of our DNA. We, you know, we feel like we're the protectors. We're we are the protectors, and that's what our purpose is, and that's what our purpose from God is, to protect our families, you know. And I think when Darius, when you lose sight and you begin to, if your sentence starts with I before God, then you become, you forget to see the big picture and who's in command. Then I becomes, I got to fix this. You know, I think he says that in the movie. She says, let's go to church. And he says, no. I'm going to get us out of this.
Right.
So when you get that petty and that small, then guess what? Life is really going to spiral and really going to, then now the opposition says, oh, that's our key. He just gave us a key to come in and start. Now he doesn't have protection anymore because now he's taken his protection away.
And
in
all
fear,
of him.
God hasn't stepped away. He took the protection away. And
sure,
he says,
sure.
When you say I, that's it.
That's it. And Mama Ida shared it, you know, say it's not the situation that defines you. It's about how you react to it. You know, as you kind of sum this up, you picked up on it earlier. You know, how should we react? You mentioned the whole let go and let God. Talk about what that means to you.
Yeah, that just, to me, it is said in the movie Perfect that you have to get out of your own way and let God. I never knew what that meant. I mean, well, it's like saying seasons. I never knew what that season meant, you know, when you're in your seasons. And it takes time for you to understand, and journeys and hills and valleys for you to really understand what this means. But for me, what let go and let God means is the moment that I take Michael out of it and I really give it over to God and say, I'm not going to worry about it anymore. I'm not going to think about it anymore. I'm not going to let it become a focal point in my life. I've given it up, and I'm moving on. So whatever happens after that, it's all in your hands, God. And once you're able to do that with anything in your life, whether it's happiness or failure, then you have let go and let God. And most people only do that with failure. You know what I mean? If I can't get this job, then I'm just going to let go and let God give me this job. But you still go out and you fill out applications. And what I mean by happiness is if you say, I want to be happy every day, and you go out of your way to try to be happy instead of saying, if I get up and I say my prayers and I start my day off positively with God in mind, whether it's a spiritual song or hymn, or if it's just praying before breakfast, whatever it takes for you to get into that God mode and allow him to remove all the obstacles that could take your day to a negative place. But the moment you start out and you go, you wake up and you call or you put on Facebook, oh, today is a great day and I'm happy. There's that I word again. And guess what's going to happen? The moment you walk out your house, your car won't start. Are you still happy? You know what I mean? Now you're starting to get frustrated. And then the next moment you run out of gas, now you've allowed that grace to be taken away from you, and you just, you know, you just have to, you can't, the moment I start to begin, and you have to catch yourself. I say that all the time. I say, well, I'm going to get this, and then I catch myself, and I say, you know what, no, I can't say it. I'm going to get this film done. There's a whole lot of people that it takes to make a film, and the biggest one, it starts with the man above. And that'll segue a little bit into my new film, Steps of Faith. I had fell into depression, and I was like, God, haven't made a movie in a year and a half. I've been trying to get these films pitched. This is a film that I felt like you gave me. I want to do this film, and we had a Christmas film on the table. And I said, I've tried to get people. I've talked to investors. I've done everything you wanted to do, and all I kept hearing was me saying, I. And one day I was driving home, and I was so upset, and I was like, God, what is it that you want me to do? Give me that message. And it just seemed like the car started to drive by itself, and somebody opened the door and got in with me and began to talk to me, and God says, I've been waiting on you to move. You become stagnant. You haven't did anything. You're just waiting on me, and you keep saying I. And I said, okay, well, give me a story. You know how we get little, like we do with our dads and moms, and we try to challenge them. The moment I said that, I had a whole story in my head. I was so fearful because I had never had that happen before. a story. And so when I began to write, it just flowed out of me, and I actually stopped writing, because you have to be careful, because God will give you exactly what you asked for. And
hey,
I would start playing solitaire, and I would start doing everything else to keep from writing, because I was like, this cannot be possible. And the moment I wrote it, the moment so everything happened, everything starts to part. God sent an investor. He says, okay, I'll do this. We got equipment. We got, I mean, everything, just actors and everything just started to line up and become in that order. And I went, okay, God, you know, you just have to, that's getting out of letting go and let God. And I think I'm answering the questions, or I might get those questions entangled or something, but I hope I answered
the whole question. Tell us about, you talked about Steps of Faith. When do we expect the hat to come out? Because you're in the process of editing and so forth at this point.
Yes, we're premiering at August the 16th.
Okay.
At the Texas Theater in Dallas. Steps of Faith is, a film about, if you heard God's voice, would you believe it? And so our actress hears God's voice, and she tells her family that God tells her to go work on a hippotherapy farm to help children and animals. And her family mocks her because she doesn't like children and animals. And then she doesn't go to church but once a month. And so how could God speak to you? And I really wanted to show in that film that anybody can hear God's voice. It's just how you react to it when you hear it. She packs up immediately and goes and follows God. And then she overcomes her fears. Sometimes we hear God's voice and we hesitate. We stop. We don't move. We go, well, God, give me one more sign. And he gives you that one more sign. Well, I just need one more sign.
Right.
And then you need another sign. And then by the time you moved, you're out of your season. All the stuff that was lined up for you, if you'd have just moved, would have happened. But that's the story of Steps of Faith. Sometimes you have to take that first step in order for faith to start to work.
Absolutely. So in a sense, though, you know, we're all kind of like the homeless people that you outline and hiding in plain sight, because when we're not kind of hiding in plain sight from the Lord and a lot of what we do,
yes.
Is that notion, and really how important is that to your work? Because really and truly, you provide a different lens in order for us to see ourselves, see other people, and then really see our relationship with the Lord and all that you do.
Yes, we can't hide. I mean, Jonah tried to hide, and we just have to remember that God is all-seeing, all-knowing. He knows it before we think it. And if we understand that to the extent of, if I rely on him and I trust him, then everything will be all right. And that's very important in my work. And I share that message of faith. All my films have a message of faith, because I think that's where it starts. To answer your question, that's how important it is to me, is to say, let me show you this from this perspective or this lens that you might not have seen it before. Maybe you haven't seen faith in works. That's what film allows us to do. I can tell you about my faith. It's just testimonies. You know, to me, they've taken the testimonies out of the church. So guess what? The thing that helped you believe was when somebody else would say, well, God helped me. And then you would be excited, because you're like, if God helped her, then he will help me. So,
help me. Absolutely. It's about the testimony thing.
Yes.
So, you know, how do people find you? Website and connection to Facebook, and how the best way to follow your work and your progress, not only now but to future projects as well.
Yes, www.kingandbrownenterprises. You can find me at Port South Films on Facebook, Port South Films on Twitter. And you can just follow you can also follow the movie, stepsoffaithmovie.com, but you can follow us through all those websites. And King and Brown is the main website for King and Brown Enterprises is the main website for our company.
Okay. Okay, well, great. So those who are listening, you can also find those links directly on the On Cue Radio page on Facebook as well. So M. Legend, before we let you go, you know, what can we be in prayer with you for on your current project or the next thing that Lord has on your list?
I'm just always in. I always need prayer for strength and patience. You know, as far as everything else, the Father will provide when it's time for Him to provide. But if I can have the strength and the courage to continue to trust in Him, and if I can have the patience to continue to trust in Him, then everything will be rewarded to me that is supposed to be rewarded for me. So I ask people to always, but not only me, but my team, to give us strength and patience.
Yep, so we're going to virtually touch and agree on that for strength, courage, and patience for M. Legend today. And we also want to thank you for joining us. I know time just kind of flew by.
Yes.
We appreciate you sharing your perspectives and very exciting work that you're doing. And I just encourage all of us who are listening to really follow you, get behind it, and even from perspective, if you feel like you want to be an investor. I know you're not going to ask that, but I'll ask it for you on some of your projects.
Thank you.
Be absolutely, or support, or any type of way, not necessarily from a monetary perspective. It could be prayer, it could be resources, or even a connection. Let's try to follow and connect and continue to help M. Legend put the story out, especially when it's in outlining God's graces and His greatness at the end of the day. So, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
And grace to you, brother.
And I appreciate you. And that's M. Legend Brown of Poor Child Films. He is the award-winning producer, writer, director of Hiding in Plain Sight, and we appreciate him for joining us today. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back and close this out. So stay with us. Feel free to call us at 310-861-2331 if you got any questions. We'd love to hear from you. This is On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We'll be right back.
Do you know God has called you? Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue. How do you lead a people who are scarred, who are broken, who are isolated?
You lead them where they are by getting them on cue for God's will, by getting them on cue with His calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
Who is your leadership? Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on cue.
And we're back. Thanks for staying with us. You're listening to On Cue, and your host, Eric Powell. Remember, our mission here is simple: to help you lead where you are by getting you on cue with God's will and His purpose. So today's question was lessnessness. We're playing on the words of really the question of the day was hiding in plain sight. And we had our special guest, M. Legend Brown, who's an award-winning writer, producer, and director. And his latest film is Hiding in Plain Sight, and his upcoming film of Steps of Faith. So please watch for that. So we thank him for sharing his story and dedicating his work to the Lord. Please go out and purchase his movie and support his works that are coming out as well. You know, I begin our show sharing my experience with a homeless man known as the Statue Man here in DFW area, where he got caught in his own cycle of perpetual homelessness. But as M. Legend shared, there are many more lessnessness than just homelessness. We talked about Darius, his main character, going through some cheerlessness and some hopelessness and also powerlessness and then ultimately faithlessness. And then the Bible kind of really speaks plainly about about homelessness. You know, in Leviticus, we talks about if your Israelite relatives fall in poverty and cannot support themselves, support them as you would a resident or foreigner, allow them to live with you. Do not demand in advance or charge interest or money that you lend. Instead, show your fear of the Lord by letting them live with you as your relatives. And in Isaiah 58 chapter, it says, I want you to share your food with the hungry and welcome the poor wanderers into your home. Give clothes to those who need, and do not hide from the relatives who need your help. And then there's a promise in that. It said, if you do these things, your salvation will come like the dawn. Yes, your healing will come quickly, and your godliness will lead you forward, and the glory of the Lord protect you from behind. So no matter if you're dealing with homelessness, experiencing homelessness, or witnessing homelessness, Christ Jesus tells us that we are one body under him. And everyone, rich, poor, every race, every age, has a legitimate role to play in that body. And when we decide to help somebody, we have that intentionally to serve that person. But in reality, we're helping ourselves and really helping ourselves to grow in the body of Christ. You know, I read a piece recently that said every Christian is spiritually homeless. And we live in temporary shelters, however modest or grandiose, waiting to take our places in the Lord's holy mansion. I believe that, but at the end of the day, all of us is part of the body of Christ, Christian, non-Christian alike. And as we all have something in common, you know, as we kind of think about these cycles of challenges, lesslessness that we've all probably have gone through depending on our situation, and we just kind of change the word out. Our commonalities are really revealed. We open up and realize that rather from, if we realize it from a great movie like Hiding in Plain Sight or for a conversation with the statue man, we find that at times we are in common in our lessness. We are common in our cheerlessness. We are common in our hopelessness. We're common in our powerlessness. And also we come in our faithlessness when we go through things. And that's why the Lord calls us to really to be one to another, to serve one another. And it's best described in Matthew 25. And it says, then the king will say to those on the right, come, who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you fed me. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. And these righteous ones will reply, Lord, when do we ever see you hungry or feed you or thirsty and give you something to drink, or a stranger and showed you hospitality, or naked and gave you clothing? When did we ever see you sick in prison and visit you? And the king will tell them and says, I assure you, when you did it to one of the least of these of my brothers and sisters, you're doing it to me. When you're doing it to the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you're doing it to me. The least, as in the title of our show also says, the lessness. It's really if we have that in common, we must do for the least of us. You know, when I think about those two words, least and common, my nerdiness comes out, and I think about the math term where we all have seen or learned about, the least common denominator or the lowest common denominator. Recall that it's easy to add and subtract and compare fractions when expressed in the same denominator. We have to find the least of the lowest common denominator. For example, when we add 1/2 to 3/4, we recognize that 2 is the multiple of 4, and 4 is the least and the lowest common denominator. So we have to raise that 1/2 to the right level by multiplying it by both the numerator and denominator by 2 to get 2/4. Then we can add it into the 3/4 and get the 5/4. And so when we add 1/2 and 1/3, we perform a similar step. So we have to raise both fractions because the lowest or the least common denominator is 6. By getting 3/6 plus 2/6 and gives us the answer 5/6. You can check my math later, but the point in this exercise is before you can add or pour into homelessness, or before you can add and pour into cheerfulness, and before you can add or pour into hopelessness or faithlessness, before you can add and pour to any type of lessness into the least of them or into the least of them, you have to at least raise them to your level. raise to your denominator. And if you're fortunate enough, you'll meet a person where you have to raise to the new level, but also have to raise your level denominator to another level as well. So the least and the lowest denominator will work in to serve to build the body of Christ for the days to come. And it's really about expanding your capacity, your denominator, in order for a universal praise. And that new capacity is not just for you. It is about to help more, do more. So let's not hide in plain sight. Let's raise our denominator. Let's raise our consciousness and really get on cue with God's will, on cue with his calling on our lives and on pushing our purpose, and get others on cue with that purpose. So that's the end of our show today. So before we go, we want to give thanks to all of you. I want to ask you to continue to like us on Facebook, On Cue Radio. Put us on your prayer list. Invite a friend to listen to the show and also to next week's show. Consider Q Leadership as your curriculum or training. Visit us on our website is Q Leadership, CUE Leadership.com or .org. And then also our past shows and also events are on our site, so you can follow us there. There are a few thanks I always want to give. I want to give all honor and praise to the Master, to Jesus Christ, our Savior. Thanks to those who tuned in. My special guest, M. Legend Brown of Poor Giles Films. Continue to support him in all that he does. My producer assistant and my Kennedy and my better half, Ty, and my little Princess Carson as well, my rest of my family, mom, sisters, brother, mother-in-law, friends, and Facebook friends in life. I dedicate this show to all the veterans who have served our nation on this Memorial Day. And if you'd like to be a sponsor, please email us at onq@qleadership.com. This has been On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Until next week.
Lead a people who are starved, who are broken, who are isolated.
You lead them where they are by getting them on cue for God's will, by getting them on cue for his calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
Powerful is your leadership. Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on cue. Let us help you get on cue.